823-4433.
823-4433 en el área 503, ¿verdad?
Claro.
Sí, ok.
Y otra cosa que es, yo me gustaría invitar a toda la gente, a todo el público que quieren compartir con nosotros o quieren escuchar el trabajo que estamos haciendo en la Comisión de los Derechos Humanos, están invitados. Las reuniones son cada miércoles, cada primero miércoles del mes en Downtown. Dirección es 421 Southwest 6th Avenue en el quinto piso en Portland, en el centro. Y que es a las horas de la 4:30 hasta 7. Y que está gente allá que no entienden inglés, que podemos traducir en español para ustedes. So I want to invite everybody, if you have somebody, if you know somebody that's in this problem, if you see something suspicious, if you know somebody that is being trafficked or you're being trafficked yourself, please call 911. There are resources in English and Spanish. You can also call the Human Rights Commission. The phone number is 503-823-4433. Also, I'd like to invite all the public who would like to join in the Human Rights Commission meetings to come to comment or to just see what work we are doing. We meet every first Wednesday of the month, downtown Portland at 421 Southwest 6th Avenue on the fifth floor. That's in downtown. And the hours are 4:30 to 7 p.m. The entire public is welcome. If you speak English, if you speak Spanish, we can facilitate.
Thank you, Brandy. Gracias y nos despedimos con Carmen.
Gracias, Ivonne. Bueno, solamente como un consejo. Si ustedes sienten que algo no está bien, seguramente que es eso, algo no está bien, y hablen, pidan ayuda.
So just a quick counsel, if you feel that something's not right, that's for sure that something is not right. So please look for counsel, look for advice, get help. Muchas gracias a todos. Thank you very much. This is Ivonne Rivero. Esta fue Ivonne Rivero. Y gracias a todos. Para mayores informes, so to obtain more help, you can call in terms of trafficking. You can call 1-888-373-7888. 1-888-373-7888. Para mayores informes, la línea nacional de contra el tráfico o de recursos contra el tráfico humano es el 1-888-373-7888. Muchas gracias. Thank you. Keep going.
Hello, this is Tave Fache Drake. I'm board operating today for International Women's Day. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to this very important programming. And you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is your community radio station. Stay tuned. We have some fantastic programming coming up in just a moment. We have Philanthropy Through a Black Woman's Lens, an interview with the major giving director of the MRG Foundation. And then following that at 11:30, what is transfeminism? A look at the intersection of gender identity and feminism. Please become a member if you are not already. You can call our front desk, 503-231-8032, or you can go online to kboo.fm and hit that donate button. We have a little bit of announcements, and then stay tuned. And I'd also like to thank you, Carmen and Yvonne and Brandy, for being with us today. And if you'd like to hear more of Yvonne and Carmen, they are on Tonale Radio most Tuesday afternoons. Thank you.
Diggy, take it to the beach. Diggy, take it to the beach. Diggy, take it to the beach. That's what we planned, but she stood me up. Roxanne, I wanna be your man. Roxanne, and here's our game plan.
Here's your game plan. Be sure to tune in on Thursday, March 9th, just before midnight, as we celebrate a trip back in time to Queens, New York, 1984, as Roxanne Shanté and UTFO go at it. We'll be dropping tracks from the Roxanne Wars and celebrate her brand new hip-hop biopic. That's Thursday, just before midnight on KBOO Portland.
Well, my name is Roxanne. I don't say no, I just a cold rock, a party, and I do the show.
A mix master. Ice.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library in Portland. Oregon Action Plan is a series of events to inform and empower our community. This first event will focus on immigration in Oregon. How is what's happening on the national level affecting people in Oregon? What are organizations doing to support and protect their communities? And what can allies do to be effective and supportive? Again, that's Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library, 2800 Northeast Liberty Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Good morning and welcome to International Women's Day. I'm Zella Zellis Marchant, and we have a very special guest in the studio today. I'm very excited about this one. Carol Tatch is the Major Giving Director of the MRG Foundation. Carol has over 27 years of experience in the nonprofit sector. Since moving to Oregon in 2007, Carol has served in fundraising roles with organizations that serve the environment, higher education, international aid and relief services, arts and culture, and social justice. At MRG, Carol provides the strategic vision and leadership for MRG's major donor program and cultivates individual gifts that have transformative impact on MRG and all the communities therein. And today, we are talking about the major giving through the lens of Black women.
Yes,
absolutely. All of that, absolutely. Yeah. So, how far back does the history of Black philanthropy go?
Well before we arrived on the shores of the United States. And that's one of the joys of this partnership we have, which is our exhibit at Concordia, which is Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy Reframed and Exhibited. It's based on a book by Valeda Fullwood called Giving Back, A Tribute to Generations of African-American Philanthropists. And through the work of the book and through the what you see in the exhibit, what you come to understand is it started well before we landed on these shores. It is a tradition of giving that has always been how our community helps each other and helps the world around us. It wasn't about just doing things for ourselves. Everything that happens in the African-American community in some way ripples out, either intentionally or through the effects of bringing up a group, you bring up those around you. And that is part of what we do. It's there. It's innate.
Mm-hmm. That's how we do.
That's how we do.
I think that's so relevant and important. Our audience can't see this beautiful book. I wish that everybody out there could. I'm drooling over it. Can you just describe a couple of the photographs in here?
Absolutely. One of the most profound ones actually starts when you look at the book, which is a picture of hands, two hands held together in an aspect of supplication or ready to receive. And they are the hands of Valeda's great aunt. And she chose that to be on the cover of her book because it was through the work of the inspiration from the community work that her great aunt did throughout her life to give back to the community. One aspect of that is it was well after she was retired, she took the opportunity to go on a retreat to figure out what would her next step in life be. So in her 70s, she's doing this. And the response that came back to her was feed the hungry. And so she opened up a food kitchen. And as she approaches her 90s, and I believe at this point she's into her 90s since the book was written over a decade ago, within that time frame, she is still doing that. I mean, it was, when do you stop? And the thing is, you don't. As long as you are alive, you are in service to the world and the people around you. And it's very much taken on as an inner piece of the work that you do. Another story that I love, just because I anything that has to do with education and children just jazzes me. And it is the story of Tiffany Flowers Washington, who is the co-founder and co-leader of the KIPP Academy in Charlotte. And this school is, I'm going to read it because I want to make sure I get everything right. It is 97% African American. It is specifically set up so that students not only understand where they come from in the broadest sense, not just their neighborhood or their street, but that they have this history that they're bringing with them, this culture that makes them strong and viable citizens of the world. And that is not something that they see from the outside aspect. So this school is set up so that from the moment they start, they understand their space in the world and they own it and they take it back out. And to have that kind of emboldened sense of yourself, it changes how you connect in the world. You're no longer thinking that I'm the one with my hand out. You're thinking I'm the one who's giving, and that's how you comport yourself. I mean, it builds character, it builds strength, and it builds such a strong sense of identity. That's what we all get to have.
Yes.
It is our right as human beings to know where we are, where we've come from, and what we're here for.
Personhood.
Absolutely.
Personhood.
To the core.
To the core. And that's definitely come up even through our station. Recently we had a middle schooler on who's in Lake Oswego, and of course is, being African American and in a mixed race home, is already at about, I think he's 12, feeling the push of where is my personhood? He's from a family that was all about protest, speak up if you don't feel like something is right. Take space. You make space. And I just thought as I was sitting in on that interview, this is such a little person having to, I also have a kidlet, and giving back in those themes are so tied to our personhood.
Absolutely.
Raising each other up. So I just think that story is gorgeous. What would you say philanthropy looks like through a Black woman's lens? Let's get to the specifics.
Okay, all right. Well, as a professional in the profession, as well as how Valeda has very succinctly put it, it's very hard to find our place because we don't see very many people of color who aren't superstars, even seen as philanthropists. This is a space where I'm going to start with some numbers, which help to build a picture of what isn't known. And this is from the book, and it's based on a 2003 study from the Chronicle of Philanthropy, which tends to be, I won't say the Bible for those of us who are in the philanthropic world, but we refer to it every now and then. That African-Americans give 8.6% of their discretionary income to charity, more than any other racial group in America. Boom. When you think about that, you understand, goes on to say, further, African Americans donate 25% more of their discretionary income than do Americans of European descent. Boom, boom. Okay. So not only do we tend to have less to give, but of that lesser amount, we're giving more. So that means what is causing the shift? What makes a group that has been kept on the sidelines, made to feel like they don't, that they don't contribute to society in any meaningful way, still do this? What is pushing this? And the last piece of data, nearly 2/3 of African American households give to charity more formally, to the tune of $11 billion each year. That's a lot
I love
of
science.
Money.
I love That's, science.
Those numbers themselves paint a very different picture of what philanthropy has done to the space where we are. When you take it out on a macro level, the micro was here in the U.S., what does it look like? On the macro level, universally, internationally, people of African descent give more than any other racial group. It continues, the circle continues. Mm-hmm. So how do we start in Valeda's words, reframing what philanthropy is. How do we have the stories come out of what that true philanthropy, that idea of giving back, that sense that you do it not to get something in return, but because it is the right thing to do. It is the thing to help your fellow man. It is truly philanthropy, which is the love of mankind. How do you do that? How do you access that? And then acknowledge that it's happening so that as our students come up, as our kids and kidlets and youth, as everyone starts figuring out their place in the world, there's a very firm understanding of, okay, people have my back, you know, and I have something in me that can make a meaningful contribution to the world. You got it. That's what we need.
That we do need that. How do you see, you know, I guess this is a two-part question. You know, one is how do we translate that to our kidlets or even the older grown kidlets, the under 30 crowd, to understand what that means? Mm-hmm. There's so much change going on in the world today that's making us think, what year is this? What century is this? You know, in my generation, I'm 36, where I never imagined I'd have to, you know, be talking about these subjects as strongly, you know, as, you know, my parents who desegregated the South.
Yes.
And watching my kid walk in a world that is treating him like a second class citizen makes me of late have felt really naive, for one. Mm-hmm. But then also this extreme pressure to make them understand without being too scared. We don't put anything down, but also like, so they know in the process that they are a part of this tradition and that it's a rejuvenating tradition. How does this project, you know, reach out to mm-hmm. the younger community?
Mm-hmm. That's one of the joys and one of the intentions of the exhibit. You know, it wasn't just Valeda saying, oh, let's lift up the book. It was the invitation to not just lift up the images from the exhibit, but to also insert into it what she calls her civic reflections class. Mm. So we have had the opportunity to have one group of people actually take the civic reflections curriculum, where you actually start, first of all, how have you accessed philanthropy? What images do you see as philanthropy that are in stark contrast to what this exhibit is showing you, which is faces of African Americans and stories of their giving? Mm-hmm. But then how do we also translate the things that you hold as valuable and dear and worth moving forward in your communities? How do you then do that? You know, how do you have those conversations amongst your family, amongst your peer groups, in your institutions? How do you do that? So that aspect of the exhibit that is a civic reflections course does that. And we have the opportunity to engage with students at Concordia University. We have an upcoming funder opportunity to engage in civic reflections. And then we have, we're opening up a school day where we actually will be leading kids through. I've had the opportunity to lead two smaller tours there as well.
Awesome.
That engage with youth. And the pure joy actually of during the installation process, having students who are walking through the library as it's going up, seeing these pictures and like, what is this? I've never seen anything like this. And that opportunity to start talking about it. One aspect of the exhibit are the iPad stations, where you can either listen to stories about philanthropy or you can interact with different modalities for how people access philanthropy. Philanthropy as relief is one of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. But there's that way where people can really sit and learn and start questioning things they see and understanding how they themselves see themselves in that space. And that works for children, that works for young adults, that works for the older generation. Mm-hmm. That opportunity to really talk one-on-one with people in that older generation category, which I myself sit in, has been one of the most fruitful places, because a lot of what Valeda found in producing the book and doing the interviews, which are told from the mentee's point of view, it's not a direct ask to the people who are seen as philanthropy in the communities in the southeastern United States. There were mentees who lifted up people they felt were philanthropists. And in talking with them, people didn't realize they were philanthropists. They're like, well, this is just what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we've named it philanthropy. It's just giving back. You know, I got to get where I am. I'm giving back to make sure others move forward. So it's that space where we let the words not cloud the issue, but also have that space to uplift those who have worked so hard in that space. Children do it all the time. Mm-hmm. You hear about fundraising drives for a child who has a classmate who has cancer. They tend to be steered by those most affected, which are the classmates. Children have an innate sense that I would like to say they have an innate sense of working together and how we can help each other. And it's when society comes in and starts changing those narratives, like, oh, mm-hmm. you don't help that person, mm-hmm. or starts putting in the blockades where that intense education has to happen again, where mm-hmm. as your student reaches fourth grade, they've had so many hits to their ego as to what their life can be, that we rechange what that narrative is back to, this is the history that you come from. It's got your back. Mm-hmm. You know, if you need to dab in there to get resources out, do it. You know, there are places and people who know you. Mm-hmm. Here are some ways to do it. So that's kind of what the Civic Reflections piece does. It helps people find out how they can make the connections, keep the connections, and grow that community sense of philanthropy. As individuals go through, they have that opportunity to examine for themselves, oh, wait a minute, you know, when I was 5 years old and I was helping my mother work in the community garden, you know, in the elderly, at the home for the elderly, that was a philanthropic act. You know, it's not always, it doesn't come always down to dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. C-E-N-T-S. Sometimes it just comes down to S-E-N-S-E. What is your sense of how you are interacting with your community?
That. Breaking it down. So, you know, in that civic reflection, which I feel it's so important. And I love that term. I might just take that and run with it. I've been using introspection a lot. Like, where's the introspection these days? You have to make time for that. And part of the beast of what's going on these days is keep them busy so they don't think, you know, or, you know, they're overthinking. But tying back to that, when your crew is watching the exhibit and the interaction and you've got the iPad and we were talking about mm-hmm. a chalkboard where yes. There's a circular poem. Is that the yes. same thing? And, you know, what are some civic reflections going on there between people who are seeing the photographs and mm-hmm. then reflecting to themselves, well, I have a different view of that, you know, those aha moments of, oh, that moment in the garden, that was totally philanthropic, or that moment I just invited somebody to my home for a meal, you know, because they had a rough day, or somebody was totally marginalized, and that's philanthropic. Like, what kind of Absolutely. Kind of moments do you see?
One moment that comes to mind very quickly, based on how you phrase that, is during the Civic Reflections class that we had on January 21st, part of the Start Without a Start is people writing down, answering different questions about when did you first do something philanthropic, or what was the first philanthropic thing you remember seeing done? Mm-hmm. And some of the responses at the beginning started off with, oh, when I was 15, I did something in high school. By the end of the course, through that opportunity of really reflecting back on what philanthropy is, what giving back is, people are like, well, you know, when I was five, I helped in the community garden. That actually began the journey, the understanding of what it was to do something that was selfless and for someone else. Mm. So that's kind of like the journey that happens. It's really that opportunity to dig deep to take strength from that. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I've known this. I've done this. Mm. It's kind of reconnecting where a disconnect has happened. What is philanthropy? Philanthropy is when you can give $1 million or more. That's how we see it. You know, at MRG, we're about making sure, breaking down those barriers. First of all, the barrier to money. What is money? How can money help the social justice movement? But then understanding that everyone has access to it and everyone has the ability to be a change in their communities. It's not just for the people with the mega dollars. So philanthropy starts small. And it usually starts without a dollar sign. Mm-hmm. It's love of mankind. So how have you shown love for someone else? Mm-hmm. Which means you didn't expect something back.
That's right. God, that, I could just go down a rabbit hole with that lately. Actually, I was just ranting in the car a couple nights ago on the way to the gym to my partner. I was like, I don't even remember what new celebrity billionaire decided to be this time a philanthropist. And I was just, I'm not going to repeat the word. Own that. You can't own philanthropy. That's a paradox. It's actually an oxymoron, you know. So to
might be branded soon. Watch it.
Oh, it's already there. Just look at Phil Knight. Oh my goodness. But so I just think it's so awesome that just mm-hmm. that's the seed, and I've seen it in my own kidlet. I've experienced that. Yes. And it's difficult to describe, and that's why I just love these different terms that are, you know, civic reflection. You know, talking about how this has been a part of our heritage mm-hmm. for, like, we can't even really quantify the going all the way back to the first, yes. you know, our walking upright situation. That's just, yeah, empowering. Is there, you know, circling back to the development aspect of it and the data, is there creativity to development? I'm sure that there is mm-hmm. to community development. Did you shed some light on that? Just
I can.
On your magic.
So first of all, we have to individually own philanthropy. Mm-hmm. We have to own what it is we want to see, how we want to see changes happen in our communities, what it is we want to have be the effect of our giving. So once we figure out what that is, so there's a lot of skepticism about, oh, well, if I just give to a relief effort, it's not really helping in the long term. And one of the things I brought up during the Civic Reflections course class that we had was, well, if you don't help in the relief time, you won't have people to help in the long term. Mm-hmm. So there is a place for, there's an entry point for everyone in that space. How an organization, a philanthropic organization, may define it is up to them. It could be, you know what, if you want to open a scholarship fund, an example, you want to open a scholarship fund with an organization, they may say, you can only open this fund if you have $100,000. It immediately takes people out of the running for that. Whereas mm-hmm. they're like, oh, you know, I just want to do something to honor someone. I want to make sure that the money is there for students who may need it. This is something that can grow. But the organization, the institution itself, has decided whether how philanthropic you can be. Mm. So what organizations can do is reflect on their policies, on their procedures, on the ways they have made access to philanthropy within their organizations. You can actually change that. There's nothing that's in stone. Mm-hmm. For this whole model of charity started long before there were institutions of charitable giving, mm-hmm. long before it was reframed in an effort to control the money. That controlling of the money continues. People who are looking into institutions can look at policies, make decisions about their giving, let an institution know you won't be getting my funds because of this, to encourage institutions to really look at what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It all comes down, in most cases, to dialogue. You know, what are we saying to our philanthropic leaders, the people who are steering the decision-making, the Chronicle of Philanthropy people, mm-hmm. the people at the Association of Fundraising Professionals? How are we bringing up our fundraising professionals to be able to have very personal and heartfelt conversations when someone comes to you and says, I want to do good. This is what I have to do good with. What ideas can we generate together to do this? You know, how can you help me see my end goal? And that's one of the things I get to do on a daily basis at MRG. People are like, this is what I want to do. You know, how can you help me shape that? And it's that joy of being able to do that without saying, I'm sorry, you don't have enough. you know, or and to even say those words even here in jest just makes me want to just melt into the floor.
I'm sure.
Because my own understanding of philanthropy started when I was quite young, and it was always giving forward. It was never the acceptance of something coming back, never the expectation of something coming back. So I still carry that forward with me. And you want to know how you can give back? You want to know how to create a fund? You want to know how to, you know, how we can steer this to make sure that it goes to scholarships or to a homeless shelter? Let's talk about it. Let's find the ways so that you as an individual giver or as a family can access, can do what you need to do with your money to make sure it gets back in the movement and back working for the good of everyone. So it behooves institutions to do a self-examination. Organizations, nonprofits, even, you know, just our general nonprofit organizations, the 501c3s that can accept charitable giving, it behooves them to say, is there something in my policies? Is there something in my paperwork that will keep someone from coming to me? Mm-hmm. You know, what barriers are in place? Remove those barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Find ways to make yourself accessible, because we all have the potential, and we've just learned one startling fact about one racial area. So imagine what we'll find out when we start digging deeper, which is the rest of the reason for the of us bringing the soul of philanthropy here, was to find out the rest of the story.
I just feel like this could be an hour of just really juicy tidbits about that. We're almost out of time. So I want to make sure people know where to find this awesome exhibit. So it opened in January.
Yes.
January 20th. It's running through March 31st. It's at Concordia University and the George R. White Library and Learning Center. That's 2800 Northeast Liberty Street. It's a free and open to the public.
Absolutely.
I'm going to close with a really quick question.
Yes.
Do you have any philanthropic luminaries?
Wow. I would have to say it all begins with my mother. She taught me what I know. And from that, as I try to reach back in to figure out where it all began, it began with her. So she is my luminary because she paved the way.
Rock on. Rock on.
Thank you so much.
For the mothers.
For the mothers.
Well, this is Zelos Marchand. We've got Carol Tatch here, MRG. Definitely check out this exhibit. You will be very sad if you don't. And get on with that beautiful pathway of civic introspection. Thank you.
Thank you, KBOO listeners. You are listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Tave Fache Drake, and I'm reminding you that this is a very special event today. We have 24 hours of all women's programming.